Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All set. All right, looky here, everybody. Look who I have. I have my buddy, Pete Beck of River Kings. If you guys haven't checked out his YouTube channel, you know, he's been doing the YouTube thing for a while. And he's fresh off his victory at the Wilson's Creek, by the way. his victory. He's got the cup to prove that he did win. So that cup's floating around somewhere, ain't it?
I should have grabbed it. It's in the other room. But yes, I've got it locked away.
he's got a light glowing on the bottom. He showed it to me before we started, and we changed rooms there. Man, how's it going, buddy?
Good. I just wanted to, you know, extend a personal thanks to you for not showing up at the Wilson Creek Paddle Fest so that I had a chance to win. So
I was there in spirit.
That's right.
Yeah.
We missed
you, but we had a good. Yeah, I did that. I did that race, I think, last year. Man, it's fun. I'm glad that the guys put that on up there, and that's a really cool thing that he's doing there. Yeah, dude, I looked at the pictures. It looked awesome. Yeah,
it was. And it was a little low, but they went ahead and did it anyway because replanning some of that, I think it was just looking like a nightmare. So I guess there's a little bit of concern if it was too low, but the boys took the longboats all the way down to the beach. They said it was a grind, but they made it. There was no less smiles this year than any other year. So it was fun. It was good.
Are we going to see some videos out of that, Pete?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's in the works right now.
You know, which brings me up to the river bell. Where did you come up with the idea of that bell?
Oh, that's a good one. So there was a couple guys doing videos on the Yadkin River, and I was looking for any content on the Yadkin because I was going to kayak camp it.
Yadkin? What state's that in?
That's North Carolina. That's okay. Dead in the middle of the state. It actually comes off of kind of the northeast side of Grandfather Mountain. Okay. There's some whitewater up there, supposedly. I've never done it. Maybe we could explore it. But it comes down right through the middle of the state, turns into the PD River, gets out towards South Carolina.
Okay.
But yeah, so these guys were doing this, and one of the guys, Shane, always swam everything. And then his buddy Kevin, who's the wandering electrician, never swam. So I hatched a plan that I'd take Kevin somewhere where he would swim to help Shane out. And that was Wilson Creek for his first time in a boat, really, really, really low. I think it was like negative 12 or something.
Okay.
And he swam 13 times, and I put a bell up and a number every time he swam because I wanted to accentuate it. And it took off, and everyone seemed to love the bell. So they just kept it and kept going. And now it's more of a camaraderie thing, like to take the negative, there's like a negative like slant to swimming, like people hide it or people.
Yeah.
I just like, hey, everyone's going to swim sooner or later.
That's true. I just recently posted a swim from the Drives of the Pigeon.
I saw that. Your swims are less and less as you get in bigger, bigger water. Your swims are more and more meaningful, but everyone's swimming. So that's what it is.
Yeah, so it basically come from that one video, and you just thought it was funny. It was a fun thing to do, so you're like, I'm sticking with that, and you just stayed with it from that point on.
Yeah.
You went full on into, you ordered stickers and everything.
the whole channel started as a way to make our friends jealous that didn't go kayak camping with us on that first trip. The whole name, everything. River Kings, yes. Yeah, so we're on the river, and the guys were not kayakers. They were just friends. We're doing this trip. It was raining. They were miserable, didn't have the right gear. we had made our way to Rockford, and which is a town along the Yadkin, and we got out to eat a burger at this two-building town. One's an outfitter, same owner, has a gift shop burger bar. And I looked at the guys, we're eating this hamburger, and they looked just haggard, man. And I kind of was giggling. I was like, guys, you look like straight-up river gypsies. And my buddy Brian Hubbard's eating that burger. He's like, yeah, Pete, but we're eating like kings, River Kings. And my other friend Greg's like, hey, that sounds good. So we named it River Kings just because that's how we feel.
Did you already have a channel, though? Did you have have something?
Or
did
you just change the name?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would post. I had like maybe 10 just raw clips that my buddy and I took over the years. Yeah. Just nothing edited. Yeah.
So, oh, that's awesome, man.
That's how it started.
Were you wearing your Alibaba dry suit that day?
Not that day.
By the way, Pete has he actually for the benefit of all of you guys, he ordered an Alibaba dry suit to try this thing out, because me personally, I've always wondered about some of these. What did it come in at, like $200, $300 at the most?
It was $250 or $260, I think, for me. They're lower now. I think they're $180.
$180 for a brand new dry suit. Tell us about this thing for the people. And you know, he does have a couple of he actually still has it 1 year later. So he just did a 1 year update. What did you what do you think about it so far?
Yeah, so my initial thoughts, I had, well, back it up a little bit. Probably 10 or 15 people showed me their dry suits on the river, and most of them are people getting into the sport who haven't made that full commitment in gear yet. And they're like, what do you think about my Chinese dry suit? And my literal thought was, good luck with that. Like, no chance.
Sink, buddy. You're going to sink to the bottom.
These are swimmers.
I know.
These are swimmers. And they're like, these things are dry. And I'm like, well, they would know because they swim it every weekend. So after about 6 or 7 months of just hearing about these things, I'm like, I've got to check this thing out. So I ordered one. When I pushed the order button, I was like, I hope I see this thing. I hope it comes to the house.
That's another thing with ordering things. I've had that same problem, man. I've ordered just some crap off of Wish.com or Alibaba, and they take the money. It goes through, but the product never shows up. 8 weeks later, 4 months later, I'm like, you just give up. What are you going to do? Complain?
Yeah.
So, but it actually showed up. It actually showed up.
Yeah, it showed up 3 weeks, just like they said. 3 weeks later, wow. I got it, and it was enormous. And so I ordered a large to be safe. And this thing is like at least it's close to a 2XL. I mean, it's when I stand up, the crotch seam is at my knees.
MC Hammer pants.
Benefit. But I mean, when you're wading in water, sometimes it sails because there's so much fabric. So the sizing was weird. The neck cuff was weird. The wrist cuff.
How was the gaskets, though? I mean,
gaskets were good. They're still good.
Okay, they're latex, right? It's actual latex gas. Has it latex ripped or anything? No, I mean, compare no. What do you have now? What did you normally have? You have an IR or a Kokatec? What do you normally?
I've got an IR Devil's Club now,
which is really good.
Yeah, I've used NRS 3 years, and they do pretty good. But it's definitely not those. But as far as gasket wise, I couldn't tell you the difference between the gaskets, between the brands of the good ones and the Alibaba. The suit wise, there's differences. The quality, the thickness of the material is different. The where it should be reinforced isn't. And I talked a little bit about that. The zipper at the 1 year mark, the zipper itself where it docked didn't, it was leaking a little bit. And there's nothing you do for that.
Yeah.
Overall, I mean, $150 is what they're going for, $180, whatever it is now. That's if you used it one season. And you're new to kayaking. I mean, I don't know, man. You know, that's why they're doing it. And I was like, I got to try it out.
It's a weird thing. I think me and you had talked about it, and I hadn't seen it in person, but I know we've talked about it several times. And it's one of those things I'm like, man, you know, if someone was like just kayak fishing or only getting out, you know, 4 or 5 times during the winter, some people don't paddle during the winter at all. Right. Unlike us, you know, it's like, If you only did like 3 or 4 trips, I'm like, it would not be that bad of a thing if it works somewhat. Because when I first kayaked, I don't think I used anything. I think I just tried like an old sweatsuit or something. I was like, yeah, this is good enough. Hell,
I did the old wetsuits with dry top and just all the different recipes you try to do before you buy the dry suit. When I finally bought one, I'm like, okay, I've been stupid.
This yeah. And when you get a good dry suit, you know, you definitely will be a lot happier out there. Being happy definitely, you know, makes things a lot more fun out there. Yeah. Swimming and being cold is not fun at all.
Right. I've never ever heard of a kayaker making the move to purchase a dry suit, a good dry suit, and having buyer's remorse. A lot of people buy a used one. I kind of like, man, there's a reason they're selling it. It's probably a damp suit by now, but if you get a new dry suit, it hurts your feelings, but you'll never go back to.
Yeah. And they last, you know, if you're 4 or 5 years, if you take care of them, four or five seasons. I mean, when I say years, I say seasons, you know, if you're just paddling here in the Southeast, we'll use a dry suit. You know, what do you think, Pete, around from about late October to maybe March?
Yeah.
And then I'll kind of, I was always part of the camp of, I never owned a dry top anymore. I went from a shorty to a dry suit. And then I'd go from a dry, because I'm like, if it's cold enough to wear a dry top, I'd probably just wear a dry suit anyway.
Yes, and, I'm that.
And then here recently, I had a long talk with my buddy Casey. I was down in Columbus, and he kind of sold me on a dry top. And I was like, you know what? I'm going back to a dry top. He's like, yeah, but you know.
Yeah, my buddy had one of the Palms that had the glide top, the glide neck. It's not a gasket, but it's a neoprene.
Yeah, it's the big neoprene.
Yep.
Okay.
I've got that. I've got his, and I started wearing that. And that's like a perfect solution for like cold water rivers like Nantahala, when it's just way too hot for a dry suit, but it's way too cold for nothing. So you got to do something. So I'm with you, like, and that's not fully dry, but I mean, there's a place for all of it for sure.
Yeah, it's dry enough. And, you know, I think if you got a good dry suit, that's going to hold you off really well. And then you can have those, shorty. And yeah. I've been pretty happy about that. But I went to Colorado, and then I realized I wore my dry suit. I mean, here it is June, July in Colorado, and I'm wearing a dry suit. And it's really just because if you swim or you get down in the water, it can be pretty cold because all that snow melt coming off.
Oh, yeah.
Well, awesome, man. Well, you know what? Something else I wanted to kind of ask you here. You have the Liquid Logic RMX. For everybody that doesn't know, Pete is, I would consider, one of the biggest fanboys. He goes all the way back to the Hefe. Maybe, did you have a boat before the Hefe, or was that your first?
Huck, man, all the way back.
Good old Huckster. Yeah. It was the Gus and Huck. I think the Huck was.
I had a Gus too.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But man, so you've been a Liquid Logic fanboy for a while.
I started out on those, and I liked them. I liked the way they paddle back then. And I still like the way they paddle, but I never was the super edgy creaker guy back then. They were just kind of starting to come in the early days. Piranha Burns and stuff like that.
Yeah, in the Southeast here, a lot of our rivers are like very sharp and rocks. Mm-hmm. So even at higher flows, still you'll take like a very like rocky line a lot of times, because then other lines open up and then the normal lines might get a little scary. So you end up going way right off a rock shelf or something. And the reason for that, having those displacement hulls, is the fact that we can kind of like glide off of it. Do they not just, Liquid Logics just go so well off of rocks.
Like wet salamander, man. They're just sliding all the way. You almost never get stuck. You just slip around everywhere.
Yeah, and then with that RMX, you know, you did this RMX versus the 5, so you did that. Tell us a little bit about what, because you have recently, you got, you know, you're, I don't know if now you're a Zet fanboy or what, maybe, because you fell in love with that 5.
The 5 is amazing, and I got owed all to Matt, because I never even considered that till he sold it to me, kind of gave me a deal on it, and hooked me up, and I was like, well, I'll just paddle this. I paddled it right after not liking the Alpha 90, because I'm just not big enough for the 90.
And oh, you had the 90. That's right. Did you have a 75 also? Or
I do have a 75, which is a good boat.
Yeah.
But at my weight, I'm like pushing 170, depending on how many.
That is huge.
So, yes. But it turns that into like a quarter slice stern, kind of.
Yeah.
And so just every now and then that stern will start talking to you when you're like not wanting it to. And I always kind of wished, like, man, if only they made a boat that was like the 75 with the full volume stern, I think I would be in heaven. And kind of that's what the Z5 feels like. It's kind of how it paddles to me a little bit.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So just it's still fast, still maneuverable, but you can, it's just a little more predictable. So
yeah.
And then less rock.
Now that you've had time in that RMX, you know, what was some of the things that you liked and didn't like about it? I know one of the things that we had talked about and was the feet positioning in it, the way the feet go up against the bulkhead. Tell us what you did to remedy that. Because I know what I did. I'm curious what you ended up doing.
Yeah, we talked to a couple other people who were having kind of the same work through kind of process. But basically, I had cut mini cell foam into like very similar to the dagger foot blocks.
Yep.
And had been placing that. I didn't put it in there, glue it. I just trying to find a happy spot. But it would work good until you really started torquing it. It kind of would fold that heel under the center point on the foot block bar. So I actually milled a couple holes and dropped the where the aluminum bar goes across the plastic.
Did you use the existing bar?
Yeah, existing bar. I just dropped it on the plate as far as I could where it would still go through that foam. And that centered it on my foot. And then I also put the little bars in a vise and turned them down to give it a little angle, toe forward, because my heels were too far forward. My toes were too far back. It was too vertical.
Do you have a picture of that somewhere?
Oh.
I mean, you can send it to me and I'll put it up for everybody listening. I wanted to show kind of what you did there, because what I ended up doing, and I think what's going on is the way that rocker comes up so hard that it's putting our feet below where the bar comes in, and it's making it flex. Like there's a bar on the back and it comes around and goes like that. And I think because that boat's so rockered right there, our feet is going at the bottom and mine was flexing a little bit. So I did something similar. I moved it down, kind of like centered it up better, and then built a big bunch of foam and then put a wedge and then glued it all together. And that seemed to help, because now it let me push the bulkhead down further. So get it, you know, we're pulling it back, and now I move mine down, you know, 4 inches and added 4 inches of foam. So now it's like dead center, and it worked for me. And then it sounded like you went a little overboard there, but it seems to work for you. So there you go. You're drilling holes, you're bending bars.
I had some old Liquid Logic bars. I took out the new ones and with the old one. I was like, okay, this works. So, I still got the stock new ones if I want to return it, But I also put a pad on the seat on top, because I'm a little guy, so I was kind of down in the boat and reaching around this a little bit bigger boat, and getting up a little bit allowed me to keep my strokes more vertical, and I just felt a little more in control. It also helped, since I'm small, I have to pull my feet in tight, but puts my knees really vertical, and I wasn't grabbing the thigh hooks real well. They weren't engaging well. So sitting higher kind of straightened my legs out a little bit, and also put the Jackson Bee's knees in there. And I am in that thing like you're in your mama's womb now. It feels really good.
Yeah, the Bee's knees actually, you're not the first one to do that. That Bee's knees actually works pretty good in the Liquid Logic. Well, pretty good in everything. Maybe not daggers. I don't think it'd work well in dagger.
But you kind of just need to know where you want that thigh hook before you apply it.
That's true.
But if you're set, you're set. So. Yeah.
What do you think of the boat, like overall? What
The boat is
you've got the 86, correct? You didn't go 96, because that thing is 86, massive.
No, 96 is way too big. The 86 does not feel as big as it is. Like when you first sit in it, especially coming from a smaller boat, you're like, you notice, okay, this is a bigger boat. But once you start paddling it, it's nimble. It's not sluggish. It doesn't have any problems moving and turning. And it loves water. It seems like the bigger the water gets, the better that boat is. And man, when you hit that line just right, it's the best line you've ever caught in your life on a particular rapid. And that sweet spot is amazing. So I wanted to race it this year, but it's so low in there at -9. On Wilson, that I needed a smaller boat with a full displacement, just kind of skip around the rocks. I think I made the right boat choice. Who knows now? The RMX is definitely faster, but I just wanted to not be stuck. And I thought it would probably all come down to who gets stuck the least.
In the five is more narrow. So yeah, it's going to kind of navigate those rocky, narrow ways instead of sliding over like the RMX is. Because I can't even remember. I think the RMX is like 26.25 or something like that. It's right, wide right, obviously right behind you. It's pretty wide. But on a straightaway, that thing is fast. It's fast. Yeah. And I agree with you. When you're online and you kind of bust through something, it's one of the sweetest feeling. Because it's not a super high, like, the rocker starts kind of like way up in front of you, unlike the newer modern boats, say like a Code or something like that, a Scorch. The rocker's back and then it lifts up. The RMX is at 9'4", so that rocker's way out, but it's not like super rockered. You know, yeah, it's like a progressing top rocker, and I love the way that thing busts through a hole, man, when it's online.
Yeah.
You get it offline, you could be in trouble.
I haven't been through a hole offline in it yet. I haven't just paddled as much as I wanted to in general lately, but and it hadn't been raining. So the really meaningful water, I haven't been on a ton of it yet in there. But when you hit a hole, I mean, it just like explodes through it. Just right out, you know, and it doesn't skip high. It just kind of skips out just right.
And it's super fast, like you mentioned. Yeah. You know, it's a fast kayak. Yeah, well, that's awesome, man. Yeah, because, and you know, the outfitting's been the same in Liquid Logic for 100 years. But then the only thing that I think, when we talked about that, I think what's going on is the fact that we have to pull that bulkhead back. Yeah. And that's what's kind of makes it, because I didn't experience that in the Alpha 75, did you?
Not at all.
No, and that was something kind of weird. And I wanted to do kind of a video talking about that. I just haven't figured out how to do it yet, but maybe there'll be something coming on that.
Yeah. But yeah, not being connected to a boat, you can't really paddle it. So the first few times I paddled it, I was trying to get right in the boat, and I'm there now, and it feels really, really, really good. So I can't wait to use it more and more. I've been using it a lot on the, whenever I can.
Yeah.
And just learning those edges and everything. So sweet boat. It's a good one. They finally started making yellow again. I just want to say thank you to whoever makes these decisions.
It's gold, by the way. It's gold.
Right. Gold, sure.
It's we'll yellow. Call
it gold. Whatever it is, I love it. Matches my tumblers. So
yeah,
no, I love that color boat. So I was excited.
Okay. Well, awesome. Yeah, I think that boat's going to do well for them. You know, the season kind of hasn't started for a lot of people, so I think it'll only kind of get better. I think Liquid Logic did a really good job with that.
Yeah, it's a performance beast. I mean, it goes. It sends.
And I think it's a perfect hybrid for manky creeks to big water. I think it goes a little better when it gets some push and some flow around it. It gives some push to it. But I think that even on mankier creeks, it's kind of rounded a little bit. And I felt that it did pretty good on that too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, truly, truly edged creekers, you can just feel them hanging up when it gets really shallow or really manky. And this one doesn't feel that way. It still glides over. The rails and the edges, whatever, are tucked up. So they don't catch. It just slides right up.
Yeah, speaking of catching, you do a lot of overnighters. What kind of tell us all what you do as far as like planning an overnighter. And when I mean overnighter, you're using a day touring kayak. I wouldn't consider them sea kayaks. Mm-hmm. Or what is it, the one you – it's a Prion, right?
Prion Yukon Expedition, and they developed it to do the entire length of the Yukon and everything that came along with that. So it's got that trihedral – like flat and another edge. Mm-hmm. So it's like three planes underneath. Not a whole lot other boat companies really do that, but no keel front or back. Not a lot of rocker either, but with that design, it's really loose on the water. So
does it have a skeg?
It does. No, it has a rudder, a drop down rudder.
Oh, full on drop down.
Full on rudder. Yeah. Okay. And so without the rudder, it's almost like a 14.5-foot whitewater boat is what it feels like. But but it also tracks sort of like a whitewater boat. So that rudder really helps out when you get into flat water. It kind of handles everything on, you could probably get real aggressive and do some class four. I know you can do class four in it, you know, not creaking, but big water or maybe even more. Grand Canyon would probably be a perfect fit for that boat, anything like that. But it just does all the creaking. I mean, all the river running from, you know, manky somewhat rivers to straightaways to lakes to everything else. And 14.5 at the length is like the perfect length for these. It's long enough to be fast, but it's short enough to get through the tight spots. So
yeah, can you see it here on the screen?
Yep.
Yeah, and I pulled it up, and man, you're right. It kind of looks like an old school whitewater boat, in my opinion, looking at it. This one doesn't have a rudder that I have on the screen here, but it has the kind of implosion resistant hatches that kind of have the strap on them.
Yep, it's got the neoprene on the inside, like that two system thing. Yeah. Sealed bulkheads front and behind the seat, so all your storage is dry.
And it's pre-on, so we know it'll last 5,000 years, right?
Yeah, mine's 25 years old, I think, and it's still going strong.
What do you normally do when you like pack out? Is there anything that like kind of go through, you know, what you like your have to's, like you're like, oh, this is what I highly recommend. Because you did a video on this at one point too.
We did. Basically, it's like extreme backpacking, and the backpack doesn't weigh anything, so you can pack it in pretty tight with gear because you're not carrying it, you're floating with it. They hold a ton, but you know, your hammock, at least I take a hammock, sleep system, clothes, all that stuff, any emergency gear, first aid. And but I take, what I do is I take the solar panels along the back, so it keeps my battery.
What kind of solar panels, by the way, are they?
Voltaic Solutions is the company, and they've been fabulous. All waterproof. The connectors are waterproof, and they go into like a Pelican box. You stick it behind your seat. So all day you're charging this laptop size battery. And then at the end of the day, you charge your other devices.
Yeah. So what it is, it's you don't just plug directly into a device. Because usually with solar panels, you know, you'd have to be massive to charge something. Yep. You charge a battery that then you have a little battery brick that you can charge your GoPros or whatever you need. Right.
Yeah. And I'll have two or three GoPros running on those trips. And the
phone. What kind of GoPros do you use, by the way?
10 right now is what I got. I love it. I've got a 7, an 8, and a 5. And I use the lower numbers less and less as I get the higher number. So eventually one gets sent to a friend or something. But mostly right now, the 10, almost exclusively the 10. If I go on trips, it'll be the 10 and the 8. And then I'll pull in a 7 if I have to, or lend it to a friend who wants to get some extra shots or something.
And what's crazy is, man, you've amassed a pretty good like YouTube, and you've done it almost exclusively with a GoPro.
I don't own another camera, just GoPro.
See, I try to explain that to people. I'm like, they're wanting to go out and they're like, I got to get this and this. I was like, just get a GoPro and just start filming. I think if you put out some, you know, some fun content and your personality and kind of like your scenarios that you're in, that's what makes the videos. Like, what else on your overnighter? Do you take a spare paddle?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everyone brings a spare paddle. And for the new boaters, that's hard for them to, why does everyone have a spare paddle? I was like, well, I don't want you using mine if you lose yours. Like, what if I lose? My uncle went out and boated to an island off in the Intercoastal Waterway and boated out just a little bit. And he was paddling out to his island and the blade fell off his paddle.
And I take it was a cheap one.
Yeah. And it was an old one. And he was like, huh, this is why we bring the spare paddle, which he did not have.
How far out was he?
Going out. So he had quite the adventure. And he called me afterwards. He's like, I will never go out again without a spare paddle. So I've never had to use my spare paddle because I've lost it. I pulled it out once when I got hung up in a tree and it pulled the one out of my hand. I had to let go. And then as I'm going backwards, pulled it right off the back deck, snapped it together. I'm paddling again. So that's the only time I've ever used it. Normally it just sits there all week, and that's kind of the way we like it. But if you ever need a paddle and you're 100 miles from home, you're out of luck if you don't have it. So.
Oh boy. I'd be probably, hopefully I'd have a saw and I could make us a paddle. Yeah. Could you imagine that? We can make a paddle out of some wood.
Yep. I have a rescue beacon as well. The actual rescue beacon that sends up all
the Garmin,
not the Garmin. It's made by, oh, shoot. Anyway, Rescue Link is the product. If you said the name, I'd remember it. It's green.
Okay. But
it's
do you have to pay a service for that?
No, you buy it. And it does not do the messaging. I think they have some that do, but mine doesn't do all the emails or texts. It's strictly for an emergency, and it sends to the Coast Guard, the local authorities. And it hits every type of satellite, the geosynchronous and the orbital ones. And then it gives them your grid coordinates and sends emails to whoever you put in the system ahead of time that it's been activated. So, you know, my wife or, you know, a good friend or someone who would need that. And yeah, they know who I am and everything. And as long as you have that beacon, they're coming to you. So it's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. If anytime you're doing those like long expeditions, those are something the Garmin Reach, I think it's a Garmin, it's the Reach or whatever.
The InReach, yeah.
Yeah. Those are the ones that you can actually have text messages and all that. But what they don't tell you, it's like, I don't know how much it is a month. You have to pay a monthly fee to keep that service alive. Where yes. I wanted one where, like what you do, like what you have there, you know, you can hit the button and it just sends out like a pre-recorded thing or a pre kind of like message to everybody that you need. Hey, I'm in trouble. Come get me. Yep.
And they'll come. And if you ever use that product, they'll send you, if you ever use it in an emergency, they'll send you a free one to replace it because it's a one-time use thing.
Okay. Well, there you go.
It's got a strobe. It's got.
Yeah, when we get off here, send me a link to that because I'd like to know what that thing is and I'll link to that thing because that's something I'm sure it's probably not as expensive as one of the InReaches because those things are like $400 or $500. I can't even remember. They were so expensive. Maybe get somebody to donate one to me. need to get lost first.
Tell them I'm Wade Harrison and I need one. They'll send it to you.
They'll be like, we need you to get lost. They might prefer me to get, they might send me a dud. But yeah, what as far as like a paddle do you use right now? Do you use straight shaft or bent shaft?
I've been using bent shaft and I like a 197, but what I found is that with the Werners that I had, the grip is just a little too wide. And so after a long day of paddling, it kind of works on my shoulders a little bit. So I just switched back to a straight shaft and I never get the fatigue out of a straight shaft. I did like your paddle.
That was the G Power Twister X.
Yeah.
And that Twister Creek X. And what that is, that has a forward crank to it. It's not really like a Warner has what they call a neutral bend or natural bend where your hands are kind of like that. The crank has like a very hard, so it puts the blade really in far of the hand, which for play boating, it's terrible. Stern squirts and play boating, you'll hate it. But downriver, just paddling downriver, I really like the G Powers. G Power and both Lettman both have that forward crank design.
Yeah.
So they're not, I wouldn't consider those like bends, like bent shafts, but you could say they're bent shaft. But I do use a Warner. I also have a Warner. You said you use straight shaft a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm using now. I got a same thing. Warner Sherpa, straight shaft 197.
Okay. A Sherpa. That's the smaller blade. You don't like the Shogun? What's going on over here?
I had a Shogun. I had two Shoguns. The Shogun's the only blade I ever broke on the Chioa. And I've got the Sherpa because my wife bought me that bent shaft a long time ago and I still got it. And then the straight shaft came with the boat. And so I'm basically too cheap to go buy something I really, really like. And so I have what I have. So, I mean, it's better than a Rio, right?
I don't know. My buddy Josh Archie, anybody that knows Josh, he ran 80-foot waterfalls and used a Rio for like 8 months running in California, running like class 5. I think he ran like Royal Gorge with a Rio.
So I had this conversation with Jerry.
205 Rio. He said they never break. That injected plastic will hit a rock and it bends and then boing, bangs back. Yep. He's like, you take big deep strokes. I want to bring him on the podcast and let him give us his Rio story because the things he's ran with that Rio, and it's still going. He broke his powerhouse or Shogun or something and then borrowed a Rio, and he's like, man, I kind of like this paddle, and just stayed with it forever.
Yep. I've still got mine 20 years running, I guess, something close to that. And it's the black one. It may be a Desperado. It's one of those two. But my dad used it when he paddled. He gave it to me when we got out. And I keep it for like Whitewater Park or some really dodgy, manky, shallow local run here where I'm just
going out. It's a good loner too, right?
Yeah, a good loner. And it's just there. I mean, it's never anything wrong with it. And who cares? You know, it's a Rio. It's, you know, you're not really worried about it on rocks and whatnot. So.
Yeah, performance-wise, it's going to fall short, maybe, but it's going to flex. You're going to lose power and all that. But
yeah, you start your stroke, and you're like 3 inches into it before the blade starts moving.
Your stroke pulls, but the blade's still here, then it kind of springs.
You kind of have to feel that. No. But I told Jerry, we had this conversation. I said, I think it would be fun for you to take nothing but a Rio out for like 6 months, and you can get used to anything. And you won't have the same performance that you will in those nice paddles. But You just kind of, you kind of just can get used to it. Makes you really appreciate it when you come back to the good stuff. But
don't it? Yeah.
Oh,
don't,
yeah.
Yeah. When you use like a crappy paddle or a bad design. My buddy Chris, he actually he bought some Alibaba kayak paddles, by the way. So those are interesting. They're called JLs or something. They're pretty.
He showed me one on the French Broad on the New Year's.
Did you look at it? It's not bad.
I said, man, look at this. And I was like, that's what I'm talking about. It's like, what was it? $150 or something?
I can't even remember. It was cheap.
Yep. I was like, well, he's on the water. He's paddling and it's not broken yet. So.
And it to me, it was like a knockoff Warner. It's almost like they took a Warner and just like reverse engineered it, we'll say.
Yep.
Or copied. And it's like, it was not bad. I was like, dude, this is, it was all carbon, two piece take apart. Yep. I used one for a little bit and I should be editing a video on that. It's pretty good. Cause I like using those things like your Alibaba dry suit there. I like seeing like, and it does, it lets you appreciate when you go back to like a really good paddle, you're like, oh, that's what I was missing.
Oh yeah. And with like the dry suit, you put on a devil's club after you've been in the Alibaba and you feel like IR built this suit tailored for my body. It's such a drastic difference in comfort and functionality.
Yeah.
All that stuff. The other stuff will work. It kind of accomplishes the purpose. But when you have the good stuff, it's notably different.
Because one of the things that you've done definitely with your channel, you've got a lot of new boaters into the sport. And it's amazing the amount of people. I'm out in Colorado. I'm traveling around. They're like, hey, you know that Pete guy with me? I was like, I do. Yeah. They're like, yeah, that was kind of like what got me into the sport. So, man, it's been really awesome how you've kind of reached out to all of these paddlers and, you know, just through your content there. And that's kind of like what makes me want to do more content like that is because you bring more people in. What do you do when you like try to bring in, because you take a lot of new kayakers. I think you got a new kayaker about every week. You'll
that's
have
right.
You'll be introducing the world famous somebody here. And I'm like, where'd this guy come from? So is there something that like, what do you think as far as like getting new paddlers into the sport? What's your criteria, your rundown? Run us down on that.
To back up just a little bit, I was just incidentally filming the trips we did for ourselves when it started doing these kayak camping trips and whatnot.
Yeah.
When my son wanted to get back, or when my son came to me and said, Dad, I want to be a whitewater boater. And I said, all right, well, I'll get you a boat. We're going to learn to roll first, and then I'll start taking you on rivers. 3 hours, and he had done 20 consecutive rolls that first session.
Okay.
And never looked back. Everything comes easy to him, which makes it fun for me. Because some people, even me, you know, all of us have something that comes easy and things that come hard. But I told all these other friends, I was like, hey, look, if you want a boat with me the next year or two, go get a whitewater boat because I'm going to teach P5 and I might as well teach you as well. And so all these non-kayakers got whitewater boats. And
these
started
are
coming to rivers.
These are completely green. They have never even been in a kayak.
Yeah. And so I'm like, I just had the camera, might as well take the camera out. And I realized I am filming the worst kayakers on the planet. These are like newbies. And it's some of it's embarrassing for them. They're out there willingly getting on a YouTube camera. And so my thought process was this, because I played sports, I played soccer, mm-hmm. I did a little wrestling, but in soccer, we would watch video. And you basically, if you can see your mistakes and what you're doing wrong, it really does help.
It does help.
And you can show me what you want me to do all day long. And I feel like I'm doing it, but if you show me where I'm messing up, I can fix that a little easier. So I figured, hey, there's really nothing out there for the true day one kayaking newbie. And since I'm boating with them, I just approached it like that. Like, hey, this is really what you do when you don't know what you're doing. Like, and this is why he's flipping. This is what he needs to do to stop that. And it's kind of on a rudimentary level, like very basic instruction kind of. And I tried to stay kind of broad strokes and general and kind of on the basic level and leave that high-end instruction for the high-end instructors.
And
I'm with these guys, so it's really fun though to go back and watch a guy from day one to like the end of summer, and he's running class three, maybe even some class four rapids or light class four after the end of a 6-7 month period, and to see that progression It just feels good. And then we're having fun while we're doing it. And the fun is the reason we all do all of this. And so I just kind of wanted to make it look fun and show you, hey, everybody's terrible when they start, but do this, this, and this, and watch this guy who was terrible is now really good. And it's just satisfying. So yeah, for me, the criteria is your personality, your body type, your age, anything that would be a factor in what water you should be on. There's some kind of run that's going to be fun for you. So we'll go out and get on that water and make it as much fun as possible and learn as much as we can while we're there. So I just really enjoy it, to be honest with you.
You're not taking people like first time in a kayak down Chioa or something like that, Green Narrows. I was like, he's on like Wilson's at -16.
Yeah. And we did take Kevin on Wilson his first day in a whitewater boat. But like I say, it's like, I think it was -12.
And people that don't know Wilson's Creek, the road's right there.
Yes. And I told him, I said, he's got full face helmet, or I don't know, I think he just had a regular helmet, but elbow pads, like he's got all this armor and gear. And I said, hey, look, if you feel like you're drowning, tap the 5-year-old girl with the floaties on that's swimming with you. Let her know her daddy needs to help you. Kind of as a joke, because these people, you can swim that whole river, and they do. They swim all the rapids all summer. You, like hundreds of people lining the banks of that river. And so the danger factor is so low there when the water's low, because it's just a trickle over wet rocks. It's more like sliding down a rock in a kayak.
It's like the lower Green River. So people that don't know, the Green River Narrows actually has three sections, upper, a narrows, and the lower. And I've taken new people down the lower Green, and they're like paranoid. And I'm like, tell the 12-year-old girl in an inner tube to get out of your way while you swim down. You're not going to die out here. You're fine.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's exactly how it is. The lower Green, it's just the same way, ain't it? It's like there'll be 5,000 inner tubes out there, and they're not even wearing helmets. They got flip-flops on and a beer in their lap, and we're coming through full geared up.
Yeah, and if you paddle here in the Piedmont at all, I don't know if you ever really have, but the rocks here are not the same. It is like these rocks are jagged and sharp around them, like the hull. And so like when the Carolina Canoe Club goes out on the lower hull, for example, at just a moderate flow, it would be like a safer run on paper if you look at like AW stats. But I would much rather have someone in Wilson at like a moderate to low flow than someone in the hull out of their boat, because Wilson's rocks are soft and smooth. And, you know, I say soft, they're just not jagged and hard. They're rounded from all
old granite. Million years old, they're like, you could slide. That's why we see so many videos of people sliding off rocks and kayaks and all that. There's rivers I won't do that, even like on the Ocoee and stuff. Those rocks are very jagged and they're not wore down. You've got a good point there that even to a swimmer, that's why people don't come out of Wilson's all cut up. You don't have like cuts all over you where you could swim like somewhere like the hull, right? You said that one. I've never been on the hull, but it's got very sharp rocks, right?
Yeah, it's going to hurt a lot. And so you'll have like a very benign looking swim, and people have gashes and bruises. And
but it's not it's not a dangerous river. There's no undercuts and all that. Same way with Wilson's. It's not like you're going to get stuck in an undercut or under a strainer or something like that. So is there anything that you try to like teach people right away?
Yeah, and this is where I've butted heads unintentionally, but I think I'm like the anti-channel, because a lot of people will go through the proper protocols, like with the curriculums they instruct with. And so if you're insured and an instructor, you can only teach what the guidelines tell you. And what I've come to find out is edge control is like a third tier instruction topic. With like, if you go to like a, you know, a standard,
level four instruction and all that.
Anything if you don't understand edge control. And I found it's hard for me to teach someone something if they're not in the boat. Yeah. And so like, edge control should be like, hey, here's why you're flipping. You're literally, you have to lift that edge, you know, when the current hits you from the side and things like that. So I like edge control, just the things that can keep you upright. To me, I think are the most important. Rolling. I like to see rolling as soon as possible. And like I did with my son before we even got in a river.
Yeah.
Show me a proficient roll. And that takes all the fear or anxiety or whatever you want to say about it out of being upside down, because otherwise you spend all day being defensive. Everything is to avoid flipping, and you can't have
You even did a video on that, how people, when they flip, they'd reach over and try to hold the side. Love that. And
it's been really funny. There is a formula. In fact, I've done it so much now, I can tell you 10 seconds. I know you can too. You can see it coming a mile away. This guy's going to flip in 5 seconds, 4, 3, boom, flip. But, and then it's the same formula. They let go with the high side hand of the paddle, and they grab their boat and they dunk themselves. It is like every time I try to break it down, and it's so instinctual. It's been a nice study on how everything in kayaking is like anti what comes natural to you, the way you have to lean, when you put your stroke, like, you know, everything is counterintuitive.
So, yeah. When you're upside down, the first thing you want to do is get your head up. So the first thing you want to do is get that head up. And I'm like, actually, that's the last thing you want to come up. Thing. But you're right. Instinctively, you're upside down, and the first thing you want to do is get up and get air. But actually, you're never going to come up if you keep lifting that head up.
Like boofing. Like if you go over something, your whole life, you lean back away from it, like on an edge of something. So training your body to lean forward into a drop, everything's just backwards. So I think a lot of what I do with these folks is really early try to get them into thinking about, don't do it the way it feels natural, you know, like,
yeah,
lean into the rock, lean into the drop, lean, you know, edge up, it, you know, all those little mechanics kind of, if I can keep them upright, then I can start teaching them strokes and everything else. So,
man, you definitely
just have fun.
Yeah, you definitely got a lot of people into it. And I know it's like anything, you know, I obviously have a YouTube channel too, and you're going to get some hate, because when you put yourself out there and you have to, and you post stuff, I've had some mean comments, you know, and I'm sure, and it's just the nature of the game. You know, everybody tells you everything you're doing wrong. It's like, well, let's see your video. Well, I don't do it, but I can tell you what you need to do. I'm like,
yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, you watch my channel, good, bad, or indifferent, it's on there. Me, anybody I'm with, you know, I don't post things that are truly embarrassing that have nothing to do with kayaking, you know, none of that. But like, if you flip, hey, it's on there. If we swim, if I swim, it's on there. But so there's no secrets as to who I am, my skill level. And I'm not trying to be, not trying to be anything more than Pete. And so I am what I am, and I have fun. And if I can help you, I'll try to help you. And we've had talks, you know, if you can help me, I want to get something from you too. You know, we're all learning. So,
dude,
but if you start teaching someone something really basic, you don't notice it at first, but it's like some of the guys like Adam and some of the guys start coming up and they get good, you'll start tweaking what they're doing and realizing you're doing it wrong too. And it kind of forces you to think about, okay, yeah, I need to improve that before. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
So it's really helped me as a paddler, you know, as these young bucks are coming up and getting really good. It kind of puts the highlight on some of the things I need to do better. So at some point, I just need to pass them off to the next level of guy who can take them, you know, really good.
And, man, that's how it goes too, you know, because it's like we all start somewhere. And that's what I always think, you know, no matter how good you get, you always start somewhere. And I've always appreciated about you, you never tried to be anything that you're not. You know, no matter what anybody says about anything, I was like, no, I know the guy personally. I was like, trust me, we're all just out there just trying to have a good time.
Yeah.
It's like, and I always remember where I come from, that I was like, I was terrible. I mean, I was absolutely terrible. I'd swim everywhere. People quit taking me kayaking because I swam so much. I didn't even learn how to roll for like a year. Then what you're awesome. Saying, you know some people that pick it up like that.
Yeah.
And that's one thing to do. It's like, if you want to get better at something, if you start teaching someone else, you're right. It's like teaching someone else. You're like, actually, I'm not pulling my stroke right here. And I'm like, I've screwed that up.
Yeah. And one thing I've enjoyed with the channel is kind of like a little pizzazz to it. I can take a class 3 run. Well, for that new kayaker, this is his, you know, if they do one thing right all day, man, it's slow-mo. You can see it and it's their golden moment. And I think everyone enjoys that, like whether it's an actual 100-foot waterfall or if it's, you know, a 2-foot pour over, doesn't matter how you run it. You still did that right. It's like a moment of victory. And I think I just enjoy those. You know, it just feels good to see, like when you were with me and Adam came through Hammer Factory, you saw what that meant to him on his face. That was the happiest guy on the planet in that moment.
And, I always say that it's all subjective to whoever you are. Some people might run a class three and be like, oh, that was nothing. And then you're right. The guy or girl behind us is like, whoa. And you're like giving high fives. You're like, oh, that was awesome.
It's the same feeling, man. And it just never gets old. And I can kind of almost relive it through their eyes on the slow stuff. So I remember being back 15 years or so when GoPros, whenever they started coming out, I saw a guy with one and I knew the guy kind of not real well. And I was like, I looked at my buddy, Kevin Ratliff, and I said, what kind of self-absorbed person would film himself all day with a head cam, you know, a helmet cam? Who would do that? Well, hypocrite, here I am. I haven't been out without a camera in like 5 years. I don't know. It's on my head, and it's a creative outlet. It's just been a bunch of fun. And the best part is the people you meet that you would never meet otherwise.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that too, because you're right. GoPros had been out for a little while, and I was actually working at Dagger at the time. And it was kind of the same way. I paddled for a long time and never filmed anything. I've got like so many runs. I was like, when did you run that? And I was like, well, I ran it, but I wasn't filming back then, because I was like, what kind of self-absorbed narcissist would have a camera on his head on everything? And I was like, I can't stand these people. And it's like, I would never do that. And then sure enough, it was like, oh, wow. It's like I started running so many different rivers, and I was like, I should start documenting my runs and just for my own thing, like my own thing. And I started documenting all of these runs. But then the problem is my hard drives at the time were filling up with all this footage. And I'm like, what am I going to do with all this footage? I was like, let's try this YouTube thing. I had a YouTube channel, but I never uploaded to it. I just put them on there and kept them private just so I could go back and watch the lines. And somebody hit me up. They'd be like, hey, so how's that Wildcat Creek? And I'm like, actually, I'll send you a link. And I was like, had them all unlisted, because I didn't want to look like one of those self-absorbed guys that just wanted to film themselves all day. But there's a few times I will just go out and paddle, but it's like I'm probably got a GoPro somewhere in a bag or something if it's not with me.
Yeah, my wife bought me mine because I did that first source to sea trip I did. Well, it wasn't really source. It was from here in town to the coast. It was 240 miles. I did it in 6 days solo. Down the Hall River to the Cape Fear, all the way to Carolina Beach.
It's a long trip.
And I had a Hi8, Sony Hi8 video camera. And I had a couple clips when it was safe you could pull out. And she's like, you should get one of the GoPros so you wouldn't have to just tell me about it. I could actually see it. You know, you wouldn't have to get worried. So she got that for my birthday 1 year.
Like a GoPro 3, Hero 2 or something?
It was a 4. It was a 4. Yeah. The last one with the housing, the audio was terrible.
Yeah.
And, exactly. It was horrible. And the fog inside there and everything. Yeah. But that's kind of we started filming those trips, and I just wanted to upload it for the guys on the trips. Actually, I wanted to burn a DVD for them because that's my mindset. But my computer was so old, it would only go 240p. So I just upload it to YouTube. And my buddy Greg's like, hey, put the River King thing on there to make the guys jealous. So it started that way. I left it. No intention of the channel. Then my uncle Matt wanted me to I was living in the woods working with the military at the time, 14 days at a time, 8 times a year. And I lived in a tarp over my hammock. So it was like a tent around my hammock. And which I'd been trying to make that happen for like a year, and I finally figured it out. And I did it with a big old Kelty tarp. My uncle Matt said, hey, just make a video of that so I can watch it here at the house and set it up for myself. And I was like, sure. So I half-heartedly went out in the woods because he wanted me to, and did this shoot on a hammock camping shelter. That thing's got like almost 500,000 views on it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here. It's almost at a half a million.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't even want to make that. I just did it for Matt. And I was like, and it's never the one you want. So that drove the channel. And I was like, you know, people are watching this. And I did some reviews and the trips and some fun stuff, but it's taken a life of its own, and it's been a lot of fun. And that's my objective, having fun and filming it. So,
yeah. And that was the thing. It was like, I'd started out, you know, filming a lot of like trips and stuff. And then I have a lot of like kayak industry knowledge from working in the industry. Yeah. And I had wanted to kind of pivot and start doing reviews like my own. And it's all opinion. You know, you can give an opinion. I can give an opinion. And that's why I got onto the kayak reviews. And I just kind of like pivoted to that because I was like, I can only run so many rivers. And then it's just repeating the same river over and over. And I was like, you know what I should do is start actually reviewing. And I'm not the first one to review a kayak. There's 10,000 of them out there. And I'm like, yeah, this will be fun.
You're the best one.
Well, I appreciate it. I can't stand seeing my own content, but I have to look at this face. I live with this.
Yeah, you get everyone can give the reviews. If you get a team guy, whatever boat that company's putting out, that's the best boat that ever was. So we kind of got to take their reviews with a little grain of salt. But if you get someone who just likes a boat because they like the boat, well, then there's those reviews. But your reviews bring that like industry knowledge, like you're saying, you actually are a fantastic paddler, so you can actually make the boat do what it's supposed to do. And you know what it's supposed to do, and you know how boats are supposed to be put together. So it's very unique. There's really no one else out there who's putting it together like that. And it's, I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine the landscape without your channel. It really is. It's like, it's crazy. You really carved a good niche out for yourself there. And
I appreciate
very
that.
Very useful for all of us.
And what a lot of people don't know is like, so before I started uploading videos, one of the things that I did, I was a process engineer. I worked in prototyping and R&D at Dagger, and I would actually go paddle all of these kayaks. And it would be like, if me and you met up and you're like, hey, you've got the new RMX, I'd be like, hey, Pete, can I jump in that for a lap? And I would do a lap in it, and I would come back, and I would give my thoughts in like a meeting. We'd have it, and I'd be like, man, you know what? This boat did really good. And I'm like, I really liked how this is. But it's just like conversations. Like, well, why don't you start filming these? I was like, okay, I'll start filming these. And I had all of this footage that I would like do of all these kayaks that I just deleted. And it was like, I mean, we're going back like old school kayaks. And I'm like, I would go out and paddle in them. And that's where I'm like, man, maybe these could. Because you know how it is. Not everybody can demo boats. They're not, don't have that. And I still suggest go out, demo, and you do too. It's like, you can take my word, kind of like what I thought, but still go out, demo it, because you might not like it. It might not be. We're all different, our paddling styles, and you see so many different people out there. So, yeah, that's how that just kind of like come along. I was like, I'm going to start uploading.
Jerry absolutely hates a review video. He's tried a few, and he's like, there's nothing I like least than doing these reviews. And I don't know why. I was like, well, don't do them. If you're not having fun doing what you're doing, and you're not, you know, some people chase the algorithm really hard, and you can see them bounce over here to there. They're only doing it to get views or subscribers. I'm like, that doesn't work. I don't even know. No one can figure this out, or everyone would have a million subs, you know. And kayaking is so small. If you're trying to be famous on kayaking channels anyway, it's not going to work. There's not enough.
Yeah, you would have more luck with crochet. Yeah. Like having a crochet channel, wouldn't we?
Yep, that's right. So I tell people all the time, you're going to do YouTube, and they start like, what if I did more of this? What if I did more of that? You think people like this? And I always tell them, you make the video that you want to make in the way you want to make it. And people are going to watch it or they're not. And who cares? That's the bottom line.
You're going to have some.
Is good. So in your channel definitely is an incredible resource that doesn't really exist anywhere else. So it's a whole database. Every boat that ever is made now that comes out comes through the Wade Harrison Review Factory.
But that's the thing, man. You touched on an interesting point there about not enjoying doing it. I really like the excitement. I generally get really happy, even like an old school boat, if I can really kind of go out. And it's more like it's my own. I would be paddling this boat even without filming it. I was like, no, I generally like really like doing that. And there's going to be some that are going to be duds and some videos that just won't perform and then others on will. And I don't even chase the algorithm. I just put out whatever I like to do, just like what you said. Put out what you like. Some people watch it. Some people won't. You're going to have some people hate on you. You're going to have some people love you. And I'm like, you kind of get used to it, don't you?
We send each other messages sometimes, you and I and some of the other buds, like, look what this guy just said.
I know. And I'm like,
block.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, I don't care. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. Yeah, that's funny because just like with that hammock video, it was something that you did and didn't even think about. This is going to get a lot of views, huh?
Nothing. Yeah.
Half a million views later, you're like,
all right, here's how you set it up. I kind of made a little like instructional aspect to it so I could actually put it on the channel, you know, so it's not like just, hey, Matt, do this. It's, you know, here it is. Bam. And then coincidentally, all the hammock companies that make these tarps now make a tarp that does that. And it's the evolution of it has come with the doors and everything. And now they even have them to the ground like I always wanted. So it's fun to watch it. I don't think I can claim that I'm the reason it all happened, but it is fun to see, like, I'm searching for a solution that isn't out there. And I kind of have made one with a kind of middle of the line, low end mm-hmm. kind of tarp. And then enough people have gotten into that. It's driven, you know, the industry has been going that direction now. So it's just fun to watch it all. Like, just an innocent incidental video is the one you get. If you go out and try to make a video that's going to, this is the one, crickets. No one watches it. Every time.
You work so hard on that. Yep. Like, I work so hard. I use multiple camera angles. I had a camera. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I don't know how else to say it. I'm just having fun. I'll do it as long as I'm having fun and as long as it works out. And, but bottom line, I just enjoy meeting all the folks. And like, we do the premieres every Sunday night, mm-hmm. Which I don't even know if that helps my channel or not, because my comments are way down because everyone comments in the videos. So, and they're ridiculously long, so that's not the way you're supposed to make videos. And then, but that chat every Sunday night, it's just like a little, maybe 100 people, sometimes more, sometimes some less, are in there just chatting it up, and it's just kind of nice little community feel to it.
You definitely do not shy away from a two-hour video.
I don't do a lot of 2 hours. I have done a couple.
But, you know, like 35, 40-minute videos. Yeah, I'm like,
35,
whoa.
40 minutes all day, because I like telling a story, and if I can't tell a story, let me tell you the story. So if you don't like hearing my voice, like everyone I know personally, then you're probably not going to enjoy the videos. But if you don't know me, maybe you'll get something out of it. But I have one story. It probably was the coolest moment for me in relation to the channel. But I went to a green race a couple years ago, and a bunch of these kids that raced, they were the young gun kids in their bibs, came bopping down the rock. And one of them's like, hey, River Kings. And I was like, looking at him like, what's this kid watching River Kings for? You know, he obviously does not need River Kings, but they came up to me and told me, like, when they got started, they would watch it after school and stuff together every day. And I was like, it was very gratifying because the kid's way better than I am now.
Yeah.
And or ever will be. But for a brief moment in that kid's progression, it was valuable to him. And so it's nice to see that generation, like, even if it's just the first step along their kayaking journey, if it helped them at all, I mean, that's kind of what it's all about. So I thought it was really cool. It meant a lot to me that, like I say, just for a little bit of time there, that video may have helped someone get going or something. So that's just basically what it's all about.
Dude, that's awesome. And that's definitely true. Yeah, that's pretty good right there. Yeah, you get them started and then they just kind of like take off on their own, and who knows what would happen. Maybe your video was the first one he ever seen. He was like, I'm going to try this kayaking stuff. Yeah. Yep. When he gets old enough, he'll come back around.
Right.
That's how it always goes.
Yep.
Well, awesome, Pete, man. I really appreciate you coming on here and sitting down with me for a minute. I'll leave links below to Pete's channel. If you guys want to go check that out, if anybody's not seen it, go over and check it out, because I think it's pretty good. Fun and his personality. So what you're seeing here is his personality. Pete is not, everything that I've known about this guy is exactly what you're seeing right here. He's just awesome. So, man, I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on. And
absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me, man.
And I guess we'll, hopefully, what do we got? We got Chioa, Tallulah. We got other stuff coming up. So maybe we'll get out and do some paddling again, man.
We need to get the elk together. I got to go back to the elk. It's been
too long. Let's do it. Compression. Yeah, do some compression. All right, Pete. All right. Thanks for coming on, man. See you, buddy.
Have a good one.
All right.